Hello, world, and thanks for listening to this week's episode of Master English with Tim, the podcast where Tim brings you a bit closer every week to mastering English. This is the 53rd episode of my podcast, which means that I am now in my second year of podcasting, which is a really big and special moment for me. Last week's episode, the 52nd one, was the first part of a new project of mine, a complete mini course on English verb tenses. This course is for students with a B1, B2, or C1 level of English. If your level is B1, a lot of the information will be new to you. At the end of the course, if you're at level B1, some of the information will not be too helpful, but the stuff at the beginning definitely will be. Beginning actually until probably two-thirds or 65, 66% of the way through the course will be good for people with a B1 level. If your level is B2, then some of the information will be new, especially the stuff I will talk about in the final lesson of this course, but a lot of it will be review. And if your level is C1, then probably the main benefit for you will be to give you a systematic overview of all of the most important aspects or features of the verb tenses. Now, let's get back to the course material itself. One absolutely basic aspect of English verb tenses that you must master, really before beginning even to study the tenses themselves, is auxiliary verbs, also called helping verbs. The more you know about and understand auxiliary verbs, the more this course will help you. That's because auxiliary verbs are a key element of negative sentences, of most questions, and in fact, of most of the verb tenses that you will study. There are two classes or categories of auxiliary verbs. First, we have the three non-modal auxiliary verbs, which are do, be, and have. Second, we have modal auxiliary verbs, which I started talking about last week. There are nine modal auxiliary verbs, and last week I talked about two of them, should and must. This week, I'm going to talk about three more auxiliary verbs, needn't, ought to, and shall. What is special about these three verbs? Well, these three verbs are all used most often by speakers of British English. And because these modals are all used mainly by speakers of British English, I have asked an old friend of mine named Christian, who happens to be from Britain, to record today's example sentences. So in this week, you will hear a new voice from a new person with an accent that's different than mine. That's why I'm calling this episode A Spot of British English. In British English, the expression a spot of means a small but significant amount of something. For example, I'm pretty tired right now, but all I need is a spot of Earl Grey tea to wake myself up. I could have tried to make a British accent there, but I don't want to make myself sound silly or stupid for you, especially when you compare my accent to Christian's, which you'll hear soon, and hear the rather obvious difference. I'm not great at accents. So let's get to work on each of these modal auxiliary verbs individually. The first one of these British modal verbs I will talk about is ought to. That's spelled O-U-G-H-T space T-O. So ought to. Ought to has two meanings. First, we use ought to in order to give friendly advice.
Okay, right. One, you ought to try swimming if you want a sport that doesn't damage the body. Second and last, you really ought to take a look at some of the job offers at our company. Some of them are really interesting and pay well.
Now, if you want to, you can also use ought not to, the negative form, to tell someone what you think is a bad idea for them to do. It means the same thing as should not. Ought not to smoke, ought not to go to bed late, ought not to drive without a seatbelt, and so on. Now let me give you two examples that are complete sentences, or rather, let Christian give you two examples that are complete sentences.
One, you ought not to drink caffeine after 4 p.m. if you have trouble sleeping. Second and last, he actually has a really interesting life, so he really ought not to complain so much.
Now, this meaning of ought to that I just talked about is very similar to the meaning of should that I talked about last week. So let's move on to the second use of ought to, which is to talk about probability. Probability, of course, starts at 0% chance of something happening, where we are completely sure that something will not happen, and finishes at 100%, where we are completely sure that it will happen. Well, we can use ought to talk about a kind of medium-high probability, one that's around 60% or maybe a bit higher. So, four examples.
Number one, the train ought to arrive soon. Two, talk to him tomorrow, he ought to be in a better mood. Three, yeah, I know it's been a rainy spring, but the weather ought to be better in May. Fourth and last, let's book our flight on Tuesday instead of Friday. Prices ought to be lower at the beginning of the week.
There is one thing to note here about ought to, which is that we never use it with not to talk about probability. That means we can move on to the next British-sounding modal verb, which is the polite-sounding needn't. That's N-E-E-D-N apostrophe T, needn't. British speakers use needn't in the same way that North American speakers use don't have to, which I talked about in the previous episode, episode 52. I'll give you some examples. Each one will consist of a bit of context when necessary, and then an explanation. One, context. Tomorrow is Sunday, and for fun, you're driving with your flatmate to another city that's 2 hours away. You want to arrive there at lunchtime.
We needn't leave at 8 a.m.
If we say we needn't leave at 8 a.m., it means that our desire to arrive at lunchtime does not require us to leave so early. Can we leave that early? Can we leave at 8 a.m.? Yes, we can, and it's not bad if we do, but there's no strong reason to do it.
You needn't cook a huge special dinner for my birthday.
If we say, you needn't cook a huge dinner for my birthday, it means that there is no requirement for you to do this. No one is asking you to do it. Can you still do it? Yes, of course you can still cook a big dinner, and it might even be nice if you cooked a big special dinner. It's just that no one thinks that it's really important. It's completely optional. You don't need to do it. You needn't do it. Third and last. Context. You wrote a 50-page report at work that your boss will show to investors. Your boss found some mistakes in the report. You look worried because you only have 2 days to fix it. The boss sees that you look worried and says this to you.
You needn't rewrite your entire report. You just need to fix a few important mistakes.
If we say, you needn't rewrite your entire report, it means that no one is asking you to do this. The boss does not require it. Can you do it? Well, yes, I suppose you could rewrite the entire report, and it might even help you in some way, but it just isn't required. You do need to fix the important mistakes, but any work that you do in addition to that is completely optional. It's up to you to do it or not. There is another thing that you need to know about British speakers' use of needn't. They use needn't to politely, but very coldly, tell someone not to do something. For example, if you've made some serious mistakes at your job, your boss could say to you, you needn't come to work tomorrow, or even, you needn't come to work anymore, both of which mean the same thing basically as you're fired. If things have gone wrong also between two people who are dating or are in a romantic relationship, someone might say, you needn't call me anymore, which means I don't want to talk to you again. The other thing that you need to know is that we don't use needn't in positive statements. Instead, British speakers say need to. Two simple examples here.
One, we need to go to the store. Second and last, I need to go to bed soon.
That's all for needn't. Now we can move on to the last British-sounding modal verb, which is shall. We use shall to offer something or suggest something to other people. We use shall with I to offer something to another person. And when you say shall, it has a feeling of, do you think my idea is a good one? Also, if the person you are speaking to says yes, it is fully expected that you will do what you suggested. Two examples.
One, shall I bring a gift to the party? Again, if the person you're speaking to says yes, then it will be expected that you bring a gift. And if you don't, there will be surprise and disappointment. Second and last, shall I bring you another cup of coffee? Again, if the person you're talking to says yes, they expect that you will bring the coffee to them.
Moving along to the same meaning in a slightly different context, shall is also used with we to suggest an activity to a group of people that the speaker is part of. Three examples.
One, shall we dance? Two, Shall we go out to dinner tonight? Third and last, shall we go to the movies?
So, finally, shall is used to say what the speaker plans on doing. Usually this is something rather serious. Three examples.
1. I shall return. 2. After dinner, we shall dance. 3. And last. No, I shall not help you after what you did to me.
There is one detail about shall that you need to know. That is that the contraction of shall not, the short form of shall not, is shan't. Actually, a British speaker would not say shan't, a British speaker would say shan't. You don't hear shan't or shan't that often because shall is a rather formal-sounding modal verb, and contractions are more typical of informal speech. Still, you can hear shan't from time to time, so listen to this one last example.
1. No, I shan't help you after what you did to me.
Okay, that is all for this week. If you enjoyed it, please remember to like, share, and subscribe. Thanks for listening, and see you next week with episode 54.